Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Religion has been top of mind for many politicos, as the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett have just ended. Judge Barrett is a religious conservative who identifies as Catholic, and she's part of the People of Praise community, which emphasizes so-called traditional values and gender roles. And it's this idea of returning to traditional values that is at the heart of the modern conservative movement, according to Tim O'Brien. He's an associate professor of sociology at UW-Milwaukee, and he says these associations with family values are a big part of what motivate many Christian conservatives to vote for Republicans. O'Brien joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about the religious vote and how it may impact the 2020 election.
So when we think about the modern religious vote, what are the kind of voters we're talking about? Who are these voters?
Religion in general has become increasingly politicized over the past several decades, and specifically, organized religion itself has become tied to conservative politics. And this is notable because I'm not talking about any specific denomination or faith tradition, but the institution of religion itself has become increasingly associated with right-wing policies and politics. We can sort of understand this current relationship between religion and right-wing politics in the U.S. if we look back to some of the social and demographic changes that started in the 1960s, the rise of the religious right in the 1970s, and eventually the emergence of white conservative Protestants as one of the key constituencies in the Republican coalition. And actually, before the 1960s and 1970s, religious conservatives were just as likely to vote for Democrats as they were to vote for Republicans. It wasn't really a very deeply politicized identity. But some of the population shifts, coupled with economic and cultural changes during the 60s and later into the 70s and even 80s, led many conservative Protestants to defect from the Democratic Party. And as these conservative Protestants left the sort of liberal political party, many political liberals then opted out of conservative Protestantism. And so you see this sort of double-barreled mechanism where conservative Protestants are moving into the Republican Party and liberal Protestants are moving out of the Republican Party. Now, as white conservative Christians became more and more closely associated with Republicans during the 1970s, they started to grow their political influence by appealing to secular conservatives. And at the same time, we see these secular Republicans trying to extend out their political reach by uniting religious and secular conservatives around a couple of what they see as core values, namely opposition to government's perceived threat both to economic and religious freedom. Now, this fusion of economic and religious conservatives is still a central part of the Republican Party. And part of the reason that this coalition is able to hold together is because these two constituencies have, you know, sort of collectively decided to recast their agenda as one focused on traditional values or family values rather than Christian values or Protestant values. And you see this emphasis on so-called traditional or family values evident throughout the sort of Protestant but also Catholic sectors of the U.S. today.
So this started as largely a white Protestant movement that's now, it seems like, enveloped a number of different Christian religions. But when we're talking about the religious vote in modern America, are we really talking about Christianity?
I think the actual tenets of Christianity don't have a whole lot to do with how people vote. And part of the way that you can see this is that when you look at how race intersects with religion. Religion is, of course, an important factor in understanding how people vote and why they vote for who they vote for. But race is absolutely critical. And it's really, I think, impossible to disentangle the effects of race and religion in this sense. So just think about it in these terms. Think about Protestants. Protestants are, depending on how you count Protestants, about half of the U.S. population. And on the whole, Protestants tend to vote for Republicans, maybe even by a 15 or 20 point margin. But when you look at Protestants as a whole, that really erases a lot of the intra-group variation in how Protestants vote. So for instance, white evangelicals overwhelmingly support Republicans, and they have for at least the past couple of decades. You know, recent polls suggest that white evangelicals favor Trump by a margin of like 80 to 20. So very wide margins. Non-evangelical Protestants who are white also tend to favor Trump, but the margin is much, much smaller. It's only like 55-45. Now, when you look at Black Protestants, all of a sudden those margins reverse. And although Black Protestants are a much smaller constituency as a share of the U.S. population, but also as a share of the electorate, Black Protestants tend to favor Biden by a margin of like 90 to 10. So you see these very wide margins that are almost mirror images of one another when it comes to Black Protestants versus white Protestants. So this would suggest that it's not something about the religion itself so much as the sort of cultural meaning that the religion has taken on. And you see a similar racial divide when you look at Catholics, right? So Catholics as a whole, again, counts vary, but as a whole, we're talking about like 22% of the U.S. population. Biden is winning Catholics, which is a contrast against Clinton. Clinton actually lost Catholics, according to exit polls after the 2016 election, by a margin of, you know, maybe 5 points or something like that. Biden, on the other hand, is winning among Catholics. And this may be not too surprising because he is himself Catholic. And there's only been a couple of other nominees for president who are Catholic. So maybe it's not too surprising that Biden has sort of flipped this margin among Catholics as a whole. But again, race matters. If you look among white Catholics, we're talking about a population that favors Trump over Biden, maybe 60 to 40. If you look at Catholics who are white, but not necessarily practicing Catholics, you know, people that might still identify as Catholic, but they don't go to mass every week or anything like that, those so-called lapsed white Catholics are about evenly split between Biden and Trump. But when you look at Hispanic Catholics, Biden is winning by a wide margin, something like 70-30 in the latest polls. You know, this is polling that takes place in the first week of October or so. So this is a notable development in the race, A, that Biden has flipped Catholics as a whole, but B, that he's opened up this yawning gap over Trump when it comes to Hispanic Catholics. And Hispanic Catholics are a growing portion of, well, of the U.S. population, but also of the electorate as a whole.
Yeah, it is interesting to look at both evangelicals and Catholics, but especially Catholics, because Joe Biden is Catholic himself. It's also interesting because it doesn't seem like President Trump is a terribly religious person, although he professes some interest in Christianity. When pressed on, you know, the real tenets of the religion, he doesn't seem to have a good understanding of it. Does that matter? Does it matter that Joe Biden is a man who seems to be genuinely religious and President Trump doesn't?
I doubt it, honestly, at least on the whole. I think that that might affect the decisions that some voters make. But on the whole, again, religious voters aren't voting for Republicans because of core religious values, and you know, atheists and non-religious people aren't voting for Democrats because of these like religious values or metaphysical beliefs that they have. Religion has come to stand in as a proxy for a broader cultural conflict. And that's ultimately what this division between, say, white conservative Protestants and white mainline Protestants reflects, or even more so, white conservative Protestants on the one hand and, say, atheists or people that are unaffiliated with religious organizations on the other hand. This isn't a divide about beliefs about salvation or piety or something like that. This is a divide based on this wider cultural conflict where religion has really come to stand in for something closer to traditional values.
You know, you've used this phrase, traditional family values, a number of times, and I'm not positive what that should look like. How do you define that?
When I'm talking about traditional family values, I'm talking about the kind of sort of stereotypical values that people would associate with American families in, you know, like the 1950s or 1960s. This is kind of like a mythical way of thinking about values. I'm not suggesting that the so-called, you know, Leave It to Beaver family ever existed or anything like that. But that's the image that conservative politicians have promoted. You know, that's what they are promising their constituents that we can return to. We can return to a place of economic prosperity, of traditional family roles, where men leave the house to work in the paid labor force, where women are largely relegated to work in the house and doing unpaid labor and those kinds of things. That's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about traditional family values. But again, I'm not making some kind of claim about that's how it actually used to be. I'm just suggesting that that's the sort of painting of America that Republicans have tried to portray over the past several election cycles. And frankly, the campaign slogan of Make America Great Again refers just to that. I mean, it's referring back to this mythical age where everything was all good, I guess, and we didn't have any sort of problems that we now see today. I think ultimately that's what the sort of messaging around family values has equated to. But again, there was a visible shift in political discourse in like the 1970s and 1980s, where you see Republicans stop referring to religious values and start referring to traditional values or family values. And this is in an effort to unite those secular and religious conservatives.
You know, when we think about this Norman Rockwell view of American family life, a lot of that was predicated on systems that taxed people a lot more heavily, especially corporations, businesses, that ensured living wages to the people who were working, that had a lot of union support behind them. And these all seem like things that Republicans are vehemently against in some ways, or at least they certainly vote that way. How do we square those two realities?
That's right. I mean, what the Republican agenda is about, and what it has been about for the past several decades, it's about deregulation and lowering corporate tax rates. So this isn't about abortion. It's not about gun rights. It's not about same-sex marriage. I mean, those are all sort of cultural issues that tend to divide liberals and conservatives. But nonetheless, conservatives are laser focused around these issues of deregulation, right, and of lowering corporate taxes. And so ultimately, that's what the goal of courting religious conservatives was for the GOP in the 1970s and 1980s, because the GOP coalition is comprised largely of economic elites, but there aren't very many economic elites. So those numbers have to be grown by appealing to, in some sense, social conservatives, and that's part of it. But then the other big block in the Republican coalition is the religious conservatives. And so by sort of feeding religious conservatives, you know, some crumbs from the table occasionally, they're able to keep that reliance on the Republican Party going, to keep that cultural connection between the Republican Party and religious conservatism going. By and large, the people who vote for Republican candidates are hurt by Republican economic policies, but they seem to be willing to look past the fact that those neoliberal economic policies are devastating to small towns and to rural Americas, and instead vote for candidates who promise to, you know, to restore this mythical Norman Rockwell way of life, like you put it. So I guess the short answer to this is that, you know, the game for the Republican establishment is about deregulation. It's about, you know, weakening protections for the environment, for workers, for consumers. But in order to pursue that kind of economic agenda, it's important to stoke cultural conflict between members of a common class. So by stoking conflict between, say, white and black working class Americans, Republicans are able to maintain this powerful coalition where white working class Americans are overwhelmingly voting for Republican candidates, even when those Republican candidates are pursuing economic policies that directly hurt their constituents.
So to kind of sum that up, it seems like what you're saying is they are promising this restorative cultural shift that frankly isn't feasible because of the policies that they themselves enact.
Yeah, that's more or less. I mean, that's more or less the case, and they've been extremely effective at it. You know, the economic structure of the United States has changed dramatically since the 1960s and 1970s. We have witnessed the greatest redistribution of wealth in our country's history from working and middle-class families to economic elites over the same time period. And extraordinarily, people of working-class backgrounds are changing their political beliefs in order to vote for candidates that are essentially trying to make it harder for workers to get ahead. They're trying to make it harder for families to make ends meet. They're trying to make it harder for people to get health care and education and child care. And so at the end of the day, what we have is a situation where many people are voting with their cultural interests rather than with their economic interests.
Even when the one denies the other.
That's right.
So looking at the upcoming election, we're in the middle of the election, really, but how important is this religious vote? And I will clarify, when I'm saying religious, just for listeners, we are talking about Christianity. We haven't really talked about Judaism, Islam, or a variety of other religions. We're really focusing on Christianity.
Yeah, and that's a good point to make, Joy. There are, I think, the three most influential blocks of religious voters in the U.S., and this is purely just a function of their size, are Protestants, whether it's mainline or conservative, Catholics, whether it's white or Hispanic, the so-called nuns, you know, the people who are unaffiliated with organized religion or who are atheists or agnostic. They swing hard towards Democrats, and they have for at least the past, you know, 20 years. But then even considering all three of those groups, there's still about 10% of the U.S. left over. And that 10% of the U.S. are comprised of Jewish people, of Muslims, of Buddhists, of Hindus, of Sikhs, of other religions. And typically, that remaining 10% of the U.S. that is not either Protestant, Catholic, or unaffiliated, they tend to vote in pretty wide margins for Democrats as well. So that's another important constituency. The other thing to keep in mind is that, you know, these religious groups aren't uniformly distributed across the U.S. So, for instance, in large cities, we're likely to see, you know, larger Hindu populations or larger Muslim populations than we are in rural communities. And, you know, the fact that those non-Western religious traditions tend to be concentrated in certain, you know, in certain jurisdictions and certain voting districts is also reflected in, I think, the messaging that politicians will put out. I mean, you're not going to see a lot of ads featuring like Buddhist Americans in upstate Wisconsin or in rural Minnesota, but in the Milwaukee market or maybe in the Madison market, those ads might resonate a little bit more.
Yeah. So when we're looking at the November election, do we think that religion is going to play a bigger role than it has in previous elections, or is it about the same?
My sense is that it's not going to play any specifically greater role than it has in past elections, or at least in recent elections, but it's played an important role in recent elections. You know, this has become a deeply politicized institution where somebody's religious identity has become an increasingly strong predictor of their voter preferences. So religion is going to continue to play an important role in the upcoming election. But as I said, it's difficult to talk about religious voters monolithically, especially when you consider the racial divides, both among Catholics and Protestants. And we haven't even gotten into the class divides or gender divides, because these are also important predictors of voter behavior. So I would say that religion is going to play an important role coming up next month when Election Day rolls around, but it has for decades now played an important role in voter preferences.
All righty. Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Thank you for having me.
Tim O'Brien is an associate professor of sociology at UW-Milwaukee, and he spoke with Lake Effect's Joy Powers. You can find more conversations about voting and the election at wuwm.com.